Chapter 6, Exploitation. An exploitation takes full advantage of offensive success. Commanders at all echelons exploit successful offensive actions. Exploiting success at every opportunity denies an enemy force time to reconstitute an effective defense by shifting forces, or by regaining the initiative through a counterattack. This chapter discusses the general considerations, organization of forces, control measures, planning and preparation considerations, and execution considerations for an exploitation. All units, regardless of their size, conduct exploitations. General considerations for an exploitation. An exploitation is a type of offensive operation following a successful attack to disorganize the enemy in depth. Exploitation reinforces disorganization and confusion in the enemy's command and control C2 systems. The enemy force's tactical defeat reduces its ability to react and adds confusion in the enemy's C2 structure. Units conduct exploitations to take advantage of this reduction in enemy capabilities to make permanent what would be only a temporary tactical effect. A unit conducts an exploitation when it capitalizes on tactical opportunities created while accomplishing successful offensive operations. A unit exploits to maintain or increase their successes by preventing enemy forces from reconstituting an effective defense or to recover from the initial attack. Whenever possible, the lead attacking unit transitions directly to the exploitation after accomplishing its mission. If this is not feasible, units pass additional forces into the lead. They act quickly to capitalize on these successes. Although exploitations may appear insignificant, their cumulative effects can be decisive. Subordinate commanders working within their higher echelon commander's intent use their initiative to launch exploitations. Units inform their higher headquarters when initiating exploitations. This prevents disruption of the higher echelon's battle and allows the higher echelon headquarters to assess the possibility of the enemy forces fleeing. This would lead to the initiation of pursuit operations. Organization of forces for an exploitation. The forces conducting an attack are also the forces that initially exploit that attack's success. Reconnaissance and security, main body, and reserve. Typically, commanders do not assign a subordinate unit the mission of exploitation before starting a movement to contact or attack. Units reorganize internally to reflect the specific mission variables when an opportunity to exploit success occurs. Units request any required additional resources to support the exploitation from the appropriate headquarters. Additional resources may include assets that allow the exploiting force to identify and attack targets in depth. Resources may also include assets that have the capability to conceal or mislead the enemy of the actions of the exploiting force. Each exploitation force should be large enough to defend itself from enemy forces it expects to encounter. It should also be a reasonably self-sufficient combined arms force capable of operations beyond the supporting range of the main body. Commanders should not expect those units that create the conditions for an exploitation to continue the exploitation in depth. If they plan to exploit with specific subordinate units, they specify the degree of damage or risk to those units that they are willing to accept during the operation. If the initial attacking units incur significant losses of combat power, commanders relieve them as soon as possible. Units continue the exploitation with a previously uncommitted force once the initial exploiting force's combat power weakens because of fatigue, disorganization, attrition, or need to resupply. They also commit fresh forces when the initial exploiting force needs to hold ground or resupply. The relieving force requires a high degree of tactical mobility so it can continue the exploitation. An exploitation may be more effective if units commit additional forces and assign them the task of follow and support or follow and assume. They assign follow and support missions to units designated to assist exploiting forces by relieving them of tasks that would slow their advances. The lead unit and any follow and assume or follow and support units exchange liaison teams to facilitate the transfer of responsibilities. Units designated to follow and assume conduct a forward passage of lines and replace the initial exploiting forces before they approach their culminating point. Normally, the next higher echelon commander retains control of the forces performing the task of follow and support or follow and assume. When possible, units assigned these tasks should possess mobility equal to that of the exploiting unit or receive additional engineer and transportation assets to provide the necessary mobility. Once organized, they are committed forces and receive artillery, air defense, engineer, and other functional and multifunctional support and sustainment forces based on the mission variables. In an exploitation operation projected to achieve significant depth, commanders may attach elements of a follow and support unit to the exploiting force to ensure unity of command and effort. Units retain only those reserves necessary to ensure flexibility of operation, continued momentum in the advance, and likely enemy responses to the exploitation. Since the force conducting an exploitation operation typically covers a wider front than an attacking force, fire support assets may find their supported elements operating outside normal supporting ranges. Fire support assets must displace forward to ensure continued fire support on and beyond enemy formations, but this may impede the support to an exploiting force's flank elements. Commanders typically establish a command or support relationship between the exploiting force's subordinate elements and fire support units and other combat enablers to provide the required support. Alternatively, they may move additional reinforcing fire support elements forward to ensure fire's coverage. The joint air and missile defense coverage for the initial attack is likely to remain effective throughout an exploitation. However, this air and missile defense coverage may become less effective when tactical commanders accept risk and require these air and missile defense assets to cover more area as their forces advance. Commanders consider the risks with moving out of air and missile defense coverage. Units request adjustments in that coverage to conform to the unit's tactical maneuvers. An exploitation mission demands a force with a significant mobility advantage over enemy forces. This mobility advantage may favor forces with tracked or wheeled armored combat vehicles. Attack helicopters and air assault assets may constitute a portion of an exploiting force's combat power. Dismounted infantry conducting a vertical envelopment are extremely useful in seizing key terrain, such as defiles and crossing obstacles. They can also disrupt enemy transportation nodes along the exploiting force's route of advance into and through the enemy force's rear. Units integrate combat engineers into the exploiting force to breach obstacles, keep ground forces maneuvering, and provide counter-mobility protection to the flanks. They also use engineers to maintain the force's supply routes. Reconnaissance and security forces. When units initiate an exploitation operation, the exact enemy situation may not be clear. They order one or more subordinates to conduct reconnaissance to gain and maintain enemy contact. Those forces conducting reconnaissance also provide a degree of security. Supporting collection assets, other information collection assets, and intelligence produced by adjacent higher and lower echelons complement their reconnaissance efforts. These assets assist units in maintaining a situational understanding of the strength, dispositions, capabilities, and intentions of all significant enemy elements within their areas of interest. Commanders normally emphasize reconnaissance more than security operations when conducting exploitation. Nevertheless, since forces exploiting success tend to move independently, the overall commander addresses the total force's security requirements. Units assign the appropriate security missions to appropriate subordinates in the same way they do for a movement to contact, discussed in Chapter 4. Exploiting commanders typically organize the forward-most security element into a covering force to protect their main body's movement and develop the situation before they commit their main body. These security elements respond directly to the overall commander. If they are unable to resource a covering force for independent operations, exploiting units may use an advance guard in place of a covering force. This is typical for a BCT conducting exploitation on its own. In some cases, when the higher echelon, corps, or division creates a covering force, a BCT subordinate to that corps or division may still push out its own advance guard behind the covering force. This normally occurs when subordinate exploiting units advance in multiple parallel columns. Main body. The actions of the unit's main body during the exploitation are the same as the actions during a movement to contact. Reserve. The actions of the unit's reserve during the exploitation are the same as the actions during a movement to contact. Common control measures for an exploitation. Exploitation uses fewer control measures than many other operations because of the uncertain enemy situation and the need to provide subordinate commanders with the maximum flexibility to accomplish the mission. Commanders can use a limit of advance instead of objectives. Planners develop control measures as part of the planning process. They issue these control measures as part of the attack order to facilitate the transition to exploitation. A unit conducting exploitation normally operates in the same assigned area its higher commander assigned it for the attack. The exploiting unit assigns subordinate units their own assigned areas. Units may change boundaries between subordinate forces often to take advantage of opportunities. Since an exploiting unit deploys reconnaissance and security forces, units adjust boundaries as the exploiting force advances. They designate obstacle-restricted areas to prevent friendly obstacles from hindering the movement of the exploiting force. To enhance security, commanders designate obstacle zones or belts, depending on the echelon, on the flanks of the exploiting force's mobility corridors. Units use phase lines and subsequent objectives to control the conduct of the exploitation. They use objectives to orient the movement of exploiting forces. Although exploitation may result in seizing terrain as an objective, it focuses primarily on completing the destruction of the enemy force. Commanders establish a limit of advance if they anticipate culmination or some other restriction influencing their operations, such as extending operations beyond supporting ranges and being unable to mitigate this risk. Units normally employ permissive FSCMs during exploitation. A coordinated fire line, CFL, ensures rapid response. Movement of the CFL is particularly important to provide adequate support as the force continues to advance. Even if commanders do not anticipate culminating, the establishment of a forward control measure is important to facilitate operations by a higher echelon headquarters beyond that control measure. Units can use additional control measures, such as target reference points and checkpoints, as required. Planning and exploitation. The commander's ability to deny enemy forces flexibility by anticipating enemy counteractions is critical to a successful exploitation. Commanders arrange operations to deny enemy forces the ability to respond to attacks by disrupting the enemy's decision cycles. Exploitation planning begins during the preparation phase of all offensive actions. To avoid losing critical time during the transition from a movement to contact or an attack to an exploitation, commanders tentatively identify forces, objectives, and assigned areas for subordinate units before the mission begins. The defeat of enemy forces and the seizure of objectives deny the enemy forces routes of escape, resulting in the encirclement of selected enemy forces and the destruction of enemy C2 nodes and sustainment facilities. BCT and higher echelon commanders initiate an exploitation as a branch or a sequel to their existing operations once they recognize that the opportunity to conduct an exploitation exists. Higher echelon commanders may direct that lower tactical commanders immediately exploit the successes of their units. Commanders plan for decentralized execution during the conduct of an exploitation. The commander's intent prepares subordinates to exercise initiative throughout the operation. Commanders state the purpose of the exploitation, which may be to force the retrograde of enemy forces from an area, encircle enemy forces so they cannot withdraw, expand a lane or gap, attack along a flank, or destroy enemy artillery and other fire support systems. The intent must describe the desired end state. That intent also determines the force's main and supporting efforts. A clear commander's intent provides subordinates with guidance on integrating their operations into the overall operations of the higher echelon headquarters. Subordinates seize all opportunities to damage enemy forces or accelerate the tempo of friendly operations. Commanders place few restrictions on subordinates. These restrictions may include clear instructions regarding the seizure of key terrain and the bypass criteria for enemy forces. Reliable, secure communications among the exploiting force, the follow-in support force, and the commander facilitates coordination that maximizes the impact of the exploitation. However, all subordinate commands use the higher commander's intent to continue to the desired end state, even if they lose communications. During exploitation planning and execution, commanders balance the force conducting the exploitation's need for speed and momentum against its need for security as it begins to move beyond supporting range of the rest of the force. Generally, commanders prevent a force conducting an exploitation to move outside of supporting distance of the main body. Determining the supporting distance requires some knowledge of the enemy force's remaining capabilities. Generally, units approach exploitation planning with a sense of guarded optimism. It is an excellent opportunity to shatter enemy cohesion and exploit a position of relative advantage over enemy forces. However, units cannot allow enemy forces to draw their exploiting force into a salient where it is subject to defeat in detail by an enemy counterattack. An exploitation may take the form of a movement to contact with a series of hasty attacks. Commanders usually issue a series of fragmentary orders that designate movement formation, the unit positions, required modifications to task organization, bypass criteria, revised or new control measures that assist with the maneuver. Forces conducting exploitation normally maneuver on a wide front and on at least two axes. The forces on each axis are capable of independent action, depending on the mobility of the force, the road network, and other aspects of the terrain. In some cases, rather than assigning subordinates their own assigned areas, commanders may designate a movement formation for the entire unit to concentrate all combat power against a specific enemy element. See Chapter 2 for more information on movement formations. The fire support plan includes allocating support for meeting engagements or hasty attacks that occur during the exploitation. The fire support coordinator plans targets beyond the projected locations of the exploiting maneuver forces to shield those forces from enemy counterattacks. The fire support coordinator then addresses how to provide fire support to the force in its movement to the LOA and targets locations beyond the LOA to disrupt enemy locks. Units plan for fire's displacement as an integral part of an exploitation. Indirect fire assets must displace at a faster pace than during normal offensive actions while maintaining the capability to provide accurate and lethal fires. Units plan on subordinate forces using less ammunition during an exploitation than in an attack because retrograding enemy forces are normally not in prepared positions. Units also consider requesting close air support in an exploitation, especially to support those forces moving beyond the supporting range of the main body. There may be an increase in risk if enemy forces retreat into an integrated air defense network. Army aviation and joint aircraft can help identify and track high payoff targets forward of the exploiting force. Commanders anticipate the exploitation and ensure that the sustainment plan supports the force all the way to the LOA. Planning for sustainment in the exploitation includes designating future MSRs, logistics release points, maintenance collection points, casualty collection points, medical treatment facilities, ambulance exchange points, prisoner of war collection points. Functional and multifunctional sustainment arrangements must remain flexible during exploitation operations. Units can attach functional and multifunctional sustainment units to exploiting maneuver forces. This changes the normal support relationship between the two forces to a command relationship for the duration of the operation. Alternatively, supporting sustainment assets can follow an exploiting force in an echeloned manner along MSRs. Transportation and supplies to sustain the force become more complicated as an exploitation progresses. Sustainment units must accompany the force with enough fuel, spare parts, ammunition, and so on to prevent culmination. Supply lines become a challenge during the exploitation as routes degrade and the conduct of route and convoy security can occur. In sustaining an exploitation, planners primarily focus on petroleum, oil, and lubricants consumption and vehicle maintenance. A significant factor is that an exploiting force tends to travel on a broad front, which may necessitate designating one or more MSRs to handle the dispersion. Sustainment operators remain prepared to move their sustainment assets forward and move them more often than in an attack. Selecting a flexible MSR is critical because sustainment units must respond to changes in the direction of the exploitation. Engineers have responsibility for MSR maintenance. During planning, commanders address the control of sustainment unit positioning and convoys. The tactical commander calls supporting as well as organic sustainment units forward and redirects them as needed. Units may have to plan for guides to assist the movement of these sustainment assets around bypassed enemy positions and obstacles. Commanders may assign elements from the reserve to conduct support area security to help protect sustainment and other supporting elements or to secure their MSRs. They plan for controlling dislocated civilians on the battlefield so that their presence does not interfere with follow-on maneuver and support assets. Units plan situational obstacles for each phase of the operation. For example, commanders direct the emplacement of scatterable minefields to deny enemy counterattacking forces specific avenues of approach. Preparing an exploitation. The preparations for the conduct of an exploitation are the same as those for an attack. Executing an exploitation. An exploitation may be initiated through orders or when reaching prescribed objectives or phase lines. Units weigh the risk when conducting exploitations for limited visibility, fatigue, inclement weather, fratricide, and the exhaustion from extended operations. An exploitation typically requires reconnaissance, firepower, and maneuver of previously uncommitted units. Units support exploiting forces with tactical air support, attack aviation, artillery fires, and other fires assets. Units participating in an exploitation apply the doctrine, tactics, techniques, and procedures appropriate for a unit of their size conducting a movement to contact and an attack. To maintain sufficient forces to conduct exploitation, commanders ensure that subordinates focus on the commander's intent. Subordinate commands should not dissipate their combat power by seeking minor tactical successes or becoming fixed by engaging enemy forces smaller than those in the bypass criteria. They strive to reach their assigned objective with the maximum possible strength as rapidly as possible. A transition from attack to exploitation may be hard to distinguish. An abrupt transition may occur when a force uses large numbers of precision munitions, achieves surprise, or overwhelms a much weaker enemy force. Normally, commanders order an exploitation after their force seizes or secures its objective. With adequate support, they can launch an exploitation with the initial assault or at any time after that, depending on the effects of the fires and their guidance. Since an exploitation takes advantage of previous success, forces previously allocated to attack enemy forces normally continue their ongoing activities. These activities include attrition or defeat of enemy reserves before their commitment, destruction of enemy countermobility assets before their employment on a friendly axis of advance for the exploiting force, disruption of enemy units attempting to reestablish a coherent defense, disruption of enemy sustaining operations. An exploitation assumes units have timely, relevant, and accurate intelligence to target these enemy actions. Commanders can also initiate an exploitation when they realize that an enemy force is having difficulty maintaining its position or cohesion. Updated intelligence is crucial to commanders, since it is difficult to predict the exact conditions required to transition from an attack to exploitation. Therefore, commanders and subordinates watch the enemy force's defenses for indications of disintegration that may signal the opportunity to transition to exploitation. Indicators may include the threat or use of weapons of mass destruction by enemy forces, a flood of civilians on the attack axis, an increase in enemy reconnaissance, an increase in rearward movement, especially by fire support elements and reserves, enemy preparation to demolish or destroy facilities, installations, equipment, and supply stockpiles. Various units intermix their vehicles and personnel in movement formations or march columns. Significant increases in the number of prisoners captured. A decrease in the intensity of enemy fire. Fires increasing in one or more portions of the line of contact that do not reflect the developing situation and occur at a time when the amount of defensive fires appears to be decreasing. A considerable decrease in an enemy force's resistance. Disorganized enemy defenses. A significant increase in abandoned enemy war materiel. Reports confirming the capture or absence of enemy leaders. Friendly forces overrunning enemy artillery, C2 facilities, and supply points. Enemy units disintegrating and friendly companies and battalions defeating enemy battalion and brigade-sized units, respectively. Commanders have two general methods to exploit battlefield success. The first method is to exploit with the forces that achieved the initial battlefield success. In this method, commanders expect those forces to exploit their own success. This is extremely common at low tactical echelons, such as at battalion echelons and below, at all points along the range of operations. Commanders select this method when an attacking unit has accomplished its mission with minimum loss, and it is the force most readily available to continue the advance. It may become necessary to reorganize and resupply these forces while they are still moving to maintain the momentum of the exploitation. The second method is to exploit with forces other than the unit that achieved the initial battlefield success. This other force may be the echelon reserve or specifically designated follow and assume forces. In this method, this other force is committed by passing around, over, or through the forces that achieved the initial success. This method is generally indicated when the attacking echelon still has essential tasks to accomplish, is still actively engaged with enemy forces, or requires reorganization before it can continue the advance. This commonly occurs in exploitations by brigades and larger units. Find the enemy. When an offensive mission is accomplished, units at all echelons deploy their reconnaissance and security forces to discover whether the opportunity exists to initiate exploitation. This effort must start almost immediately after an attacking unit seizes its objective. These reconnaissance and security forces must gain and maintain enemy contact while remaining within the supporting range of their parent organization. Gaining and maintaining contact with enemy forces is critical, since enemy forces may be trying to break contact or reorganize. The commander's intent determines how much contact is required to maintain pressure on an enemy force, increase their disorganization, or seize key or decisive terrain. Units employ their reconnaissance assets to observe enemy force movements and search for weakly defended enemy positions. If those assets are not available, other maneuver units perform those reconnaissance tasks. While maintaining observation of enemy forces, the reconnaissance force tries to locate enemy reserves, uncommitted forces, and blocking positions. This effort helps the exploiting force avoid ambushes as the enemy force seeks to recover the initiative by counterattacking. Units use aerial reconnaissance to augment ground reconnaissance. They employ aerial sensors, such as manned and unmanned aircraft systems, in advance of ground maneuver reconnaissance. This allows aerial observation of named and targeted areas of interest that facilitate their maneuver and cue the attack of targets. Armed manned and unmanned aircraft can locate enemy positions and engage enemy forces to disrupt their movement and preparations. Aerial assets maintain constant contact and pressure on the enemy. A commander's decision to exploit stems from the assumption that enemy forces have already been somewhat disrupted. Units use all available resources to maintain pressure and overwhelm enemy forces. Units combine the effects of operations against enemy reserves and uncommitted forces with the rapid maneuver of ground forces to maintain this disruption. When permissible, attack aviation elements can maneuver in front of or over exploiting ground maneuver forces to destroy targets. Units seek to integrate fixed-wing aircraft into the fires plan for attacking these targets. The exploiting force advances to keep the enemy force off balance and degrade enemy intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance capabilities. The exploiting force's fire support system must deliver massed fires quickly to respond to any contingencies that arise during the exploitation. Fix the enemy. As part of its shaping operations, an exploiting force has three goals in fixing an enemy force. First, fix enemy units in positions out of supporting distance of each other. This allows the exploiting force to defeat enemy forces in detail. Second, units attack out of contact enemy forces before they can affect the exploitation. By attacking these enemy forces, units seek to fix them in their current positions or force them to move to locations where they can be contained until the exploiting force or a follow-in support force can engage and defeat them. Third, it achieves a specific targeting effect, such as causing 15% casualties that disrupts the enemy commander's plan. Finish the enemy. The exploiting force maneuvers to maintain pressure on the enemy and to prevent their reorganization or escape. Units take advantage of any available vertical envelopment capabilities to accomplish these missions. The exploiting force clears only enough of its assigned area to permit its advance. It cuts through enemy logistics units and locks to seize objectives vital to the enemy force's defense. It attacks from the march to overrun weak enemy formations. Exploiting forces can, based on the bypass criteria, contain and bypass those enemy pockets of resistance too small to jeopardize the mission. Commanders report enemy forces to adjacent units, following units, and higher echelon headquarters. If an enemy unit is too strong for the leading elements of the exploiting force to overrun and destroy, succeeding elements of the force conduct a hasty attack based on the combat information provided by its leading elements. In almost all cases, units use forms of maneuver other than the frontal attack to produce faster and better results with fewer casualties. While the exploiting force is seeking one or more assailable flanks, available fire support systems continue to engage enemy forces to divert attention from the attempted envelopment and destroy as much enemy combat power as possible. An exploiting force may face prepared belts of defensive positions in depth when it is exploiting the initial success of the attack. Therefore, the exploiting force must move to attack and destroy enemy defending forces before they can occupy subsequent or supplemental positions. The faster the exploiting force moves, the less likely it is that succeeding defensive lines will be fully prepared and the less effort it will take to penetrate each successive defensive position. The exploiting force attacks and maneuvers as many times as necessary until it breaks completely through the enemy force's defenses. A commander's primary concern when initiating an exploitation resulting from a successful attack is rapidly shifting the force into the appropriate task organization to take advantage of a window of opportunity. Commanders control their formation as it moves and prevent its overextension. They anticipate the enemy force's reactions to friendly actions. The real danger to the exploiting force is not the immediate enemy force, but the enemy force is not yet engaged. Overextension is a risk inherent in exploitation. While commanders avoid overextension, they must also guard against being overcautious. Follow through. Once the exploitation begins, friendly forces quickly move to attack enemy forces. The exploitation continues, so enemy forces cannot escape. The exploiting force retains terrain only as necessary to accomplish its mission. Commanders are careful not to dissipate combat power to achieve minor tactical successes or to reduce small enemy forces. They shift operations to reconnaissance and surveillance, countermobility, and protection tasks because of the possibility of an enemy counterattack once their exploiting forces reach their respective objectives. During an exploitation, units often surround or bypass enemy forces. Surrender appeals and ultimatums are particularly effective when directed against surrounded, isolated, or bypassed enemy units. While the exploiting force conducts its operations, the follow-in support force, if available, widens or secures the flanks, destroys bypassed enemy units, relieves supported units that have halted to contain enemy forces, blocks the movement of enemy reinforcements, opens and secures locks, guards prisoners, key areas, seized enemy bases and installations and routes, controls dislocated civilians, secures key terrain, secures potential threats, abandoned enemy equipment, weapons, ordnance, explosives, and toxic materials, including chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear. At some point, units conducting exploitation either reach their culminating point or transition to a pursuit. Culmination can occur for various reasons, such as friendly losses or the enemy's commitment of a reserve. Units transition to another type of operation once they make an assessment that their force is approaching culmination. For example, a pursuit enables units to complete the enemy force's destruction.